Welcome to Current State from WKAR, your NPR station for the Capital Region. I'm education reporter Kevin Lavery. On this special edition of Current State, we're going back to school. Over the next hour, you'll hear about the struggles and successes of Michigan education. We'll talk about reading strategies with Capital Area Literacy Coalition Executive Director Lois Bader. We'll explore some of the reasons why people enter and leave the teaching profession. We'll head up north to visit an elementary school that's turned its numbers around in a big way. And we'll introduce you to Michigan's Teacher of the Year. But first, we begin with some hard truths. There's a crisis in the classroom. Michigan students are not meeting state and national performance standards. This is especially true in language arts.
Third graders here in Michigan are struggling when it comes to reading.
That is despite the state investing.
Here in Michigan, a new law is in place that could lead to third grade students being held back if they aren't reading up to grade level standards.
That report claims that third grade students in Michigan perform worse than students in other states. That report is by Education Trust Midwest.
When only 35% of our third graders are proficient in reading, they've been failed.
Punitive measures are not the things that inspire kids and families and teachers to meet literacy expectations.
That's just a sample of some of the news reports here in Michigan. We also heard from the two-party gubernatorial nominees, Republican Bill Schuette and Democrat Gretchen Whitmer. Michigan has a vision to become a top 10 education state. But to get there, it must first pull itself up from its spot among the 10 worst in the nation. Earlier this year, I spoke with Alicia Guevara Warren with the Michigan League for Public Policy. She directs the Kids Count Project in Michigan. It's a report that uses 16 key indicators that measure the health, economic security, family life, and education of more than 2 million Michigan children.
We use credible, reliable data from sources like the American Community Survey, the Census Bureau. We do special data requests to state departments of health and human services and education. So our job is really trying to pull together what would be complicated data sets and try to put it into a form that's more usable and readable for our community partners and for families.
Let's look at third grade reading proficiency. It's called English Language Arts. The data we have from the 2017 book shows 54% of third graders in the state not proficient in English language arts. The most recent book, 55.9%. That's almost two whole percentage points, despite the fact that our poverty rates, which is a big indicator of success, are going down. What's going on there?
I think a couple of different things are happening here. When we look at third grade reading, we really only have 3 years worth of data. So if we look at 2015 and 2016 child poverty rates, we only see a small decline. We know that poverty does have a pretty significant impact on a child's education and their access really to the type of schools that have the ability to really provide the things that students need. Reading proficiency for students from families with low incomes is about 70% are not proficient compared to 40% of students who are not living in low-income families. So it's important to see that there's a pretty significant disparity. But again, when we look at the numbers, even as a whole, it's an issue that all kids and all schools seem to be struggling with.
I don't fault our government and civic leaders for being optimistic in terms of the pitch, the message, come to Michigan, you know, learn the new economy, the new IT skills, et cetera. But looking at these numbers, I mean, it's hard not to see the disconnect between the rhetoric and the reality.
Absolutely. You know, when we look at these 16 different measures, we try to take a comprehensive look at how our kids are doing across economic security, education, health and safety, and family and community. And we are seeing some progress. So we can't, you know, I don't want to diminish the fact that there is some progress being made. I wouldn't consider it a huge win, but we are seeing fewer kids living in poverty. Most counties saw an improvement. But when we start looking at the ranges of poverty in particular across our counties and our state, we see a low of 6.4% in Livingston County and over 40% in Lake County. We see some significant racial and ethnic disparities, which is also troubling when we see, you know, about 42% of African-American kids living in poverty, about 30% of Latinx kids in poverty. So yes, we're making some progress, but the data is showing us that more than half of these 16 indicators have either stagnated or they've worsened over time. So clearly there's still a lot of work to do.
poverty is a huge factor, but it's not the only factor. There's the home life, and then there's the in-classroom life. To what degree can teachers be reasonably held accountable for this slide?
I think that most would agree that they could use extra support. I mean, when we think about classroom sizes, teachers' ability to access professional development, I think that teachers would say, yes, please give me some extra support to be able to improve reading scores.
Are parents really aware of this information? I mean, how do you market this in a way that means something to people who are most affected?
I think from a parent perspective, it's a tool for beginning conversations and beginning to connect with other people in their own communities who are interested in trying to make things better.
Alicia Guevara-Warren is the project director for Michigan Kids Count, a project of the Michigan League for Public Policy. We've been talking about the latest Kids Count data book for 2018. Alicia, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Education is a key indicator of a child's future success and just one of the factors that contribute to their quality of life. The Kids Count report ranks that sense of well-being for kids in each of Michigan's 83 counties. In 2018, Livingston County earned the top honor. And right next door, Ingham County came in near the middle at number 40. I visited two area elementary schools, one in each county, to see how each one is teaching literacy skills to some of their youngest learners. At Challenger Elementary in Howell, a room full of kindergartners is hard at work learning about the weather.
Do rainbows?
You can do rainbows on your umbrella, you're right.
They're not quite ready for dew points and barometric pressure. For now, they're coloring vibrant paper rainbows and writing their thoughts about spring. Melissa Richards circles the room and smiles. She's in a profession that requires her to plan like an adult, but think like a child.
I think that kind of draws why teachers want to be teachers.
Richard is a literacy specialist at Challenger. These are just some of the students she assesses three times each year to check that their skills remain sharp. In the early grades, she starts them off with word sounds and syllables. Richard calls these exercises things you can do in the dark.
With kindergarten, a typical lesson at the beginning of the year might focus just on rhyme. Can they rhyme? Can they hear rhyming? Can they produce rhyming? And then going down the scope of phonological awareness.
Some of these kindergartners may have been first exposed to these skills in preschool, but it's a good bet that most were not. Though Livingston County enjoys the highest per capita income rate in Michigan, that means many social programs cost more here, and that puts them out of reach for families not living in the upper strata. Mike Hubert is the superintendent of the Livingston Educational Service Agency. He says less than half of Livingston students enter kindergarten after attending a high-quality preschool.
They're not going to grow, if they're from a position of poverty, as much and as quickly to catch up with their peers, because their peers are accelerating their learning. Our schools right now just don't give enough support to the students to fully catch up with their peers.
Urban school districts face much of the same. In Ingham County, 54% of 3- and 4-year-olds are not in preschool. That's higher than the statewide average. In Lansing, school officials are trying to blend Great Start, Head Start, and early special ed classes under one plan, a move that's designed to give kids in all three programs the highest possible level of support. The district is also poised to roll out a new core reading program, a change that Lansing Deputy Superintendent Mark Coscarella says is long overdue.
The last time Lansing could afford to purchase a core reading program was back in 2006. We know we've learned a lot more about how to teach reading. We know that the standards have changed and assessments have changed since that time. And yet our kids are still forced to work with a curriculum that's not current and modern.
That new curriculum may be a breath of fresh air for frustrated teachers struggling to stem a downhill slide. Friday afternoon at Riddle Elementary in Lansing, a stream of giddy kids pours out the door. Since 2015, Riddle has seen its third grade English language arts proficiency scores drop from 41 to 14%. Nicole Beard taught school for 17 years. Now she feels the pressure at the principal's desk.
Every administrator experiences this. They kind of hold their breath when they see that percentage before them, and they always hope, oh Lord, please don't let it drop again.
Beard doesn't shy away from the statistics, but she knows it only tells part of the story. Her kids' success in the classroom is largely shaped by their lives outside of it, and Beard has seen her share of trauma.
I can see when a child walks through the door, come on, let's talk. What's going on? There are many factors that our children may never tell us that they deal with. If we're going to be effective, if we're going to increase that percentage that we are judged by, that's the work that has to take place that people don't talk about.
Principal Nicole Beard believes in a holistic approach to education. Improve the student and you've improved the scores. Fostering a positive environment is key and a mindset she tries to impart to her team.
At the end of the day, we say, if this were my child, would this be the ideal setting that I want my child to be placed in? And that drives us every day.
When the class of 2018 turned its tassels last spring, thousands of new graduates in Michigan began making important choices about life and career plans. The end of a school year is a crossroads for many people. Sometimes that includes teachers who may find themselves making hard decisions. People choose to become teachers for many reasons, and there are just as many reasons for why they leave. The challenge before Michigan is to find ways to keep more teachers walking in the revolving door than walking out. Alex Rogers is excited about starting third grade. Again, next week she'll begin as a brand new teacher in the Holt Public Schools. Rogers finished her teaching internship last April, but she still remembers the conversations she used to have with people 5 years ago as a new transfer student at Michigan State University.
When people asked me why I was coming here and I told them, teaching, more times than not, I got people that would just pause or freeze in their steps and go, really, why?
Alex Rogers knows the paradox she will soon face. There's an old-fashioned sentiment in America that still speaks of teachers in the same reverent pillar of society tones afforded to police officers and firefighters. But the appreciation is rarely reflected in compensation.
Over half of our teachers leave within the first 5 years, and a lot of that is for financial reasons.
Ruth Beyer is the economist for the Michigan Education Association, the state's largest teachers union. She says a married teacher with a non-working spouse making the state's $36,000 average starting salary qualifies for a bridge card. That's the state's food assistance program. Beyer says ever since districts saw their revenues cut a decade ago, many teachers have stayed frozen on the ladder.
I was just in a district north of here. They've had teachers at the beginning step for 8 years. No raise, no inflationary raise, nothing. They're making $36,000 a year for 8 years.
Just 3 years in, the bell is sounding for Jerry Cahoon. Cahoon teaches ninth grade U.S. history at Holt High School. Throughout his career, he supplemented his income in the summer by working in road construction. Now a full-time opportunity has arisen, and Cahoon admits it took him by surprise.
The position that I was offered, it would take me probably another 10 or 15 years of teaching to get to that level.
The moment took this wrestling coach to the mat. Cahoon struggled a long time with his decision. Last January, he wrote his resignation.
I was sitting at my desk. I think I stood up and sat down about four different times before I finally took it downstairs. Just had to ask myself every single time, is this the right decision? Is this the right decision? Because I love teaching. I love being here with the kids every day. But at the end of the day, I think my decision was, you work to make a living, so I want to make the best one that I can.
The paycheck isn't the only factor that drives a teacher's motivations, though money weighs in on a host of other concerns. Teacher walkouts this year in West Virginia, Oklahoma, Colorado, and Arizona have also pushed for more material support in the classroom. Corey Drake is the director of teacher preparation at Michigan State University's College of Education. It's her job to help emerging new teachers keep their ideals while keeping it real. Drake says that involves having honest conversations about the realities of their chosen career.
This is the world you're going into, and there are policies and curricula and tests, and part of what we're preparing you for is how to navigate those in ways that leave you hopefully not feeling burnt out, that help you think about ways to advocate for yourself and for your students.
Alex Rogers, the soon-to-be Holt Elementary teacher, is unfazed.
I think a lot of people will try to steer new teachers away. They'll say that it might not be worth it financially, or it's very hard and strenuous on many different reasons. But I think that if it's something you feel that you're meant to do, that you need to take that chance, because more than likely you'll be happy doing it.
And that brings us to the kicker of this story. Remember Ruth Beyer, the teachers' union numbers cruncher? Guess what she's doing next.
I've always wanted to be a teacher, but I just couldn't afford it. So I actually had to work an entire career and save enough money for my retirement so I could teach.
Beyer is finishing her education to be certified to teach K-8. She hopes to teach middle school math in a couple of years.
I think it's the most important job there is. If you don't have quality people teaching the next generation, then what's the next generation going to be?
When we return, one Michigan literacy expert shares her thoughts and a word of caution on the state's third grade reading law. And later, an elementary school in a small tourist town turns its numbers completely around.
We can have our kids together celebrating, acknowledging each other, and really focusing more on what we can do instead of what we can't.
We'll go up north to Kenwood Elementary in Cadillac, Michigan. Coming up on Current State from WKAR, your NPR station for the Capital Region. Welcome back to Current State from WKAR, your NPR station for the Capital Region. I'm Kevin Lavery. If you ask a young child what summer slide means, you're likely to hear something about their favorite playground or a water park. But just ask a teacher and you'll get an entirely different answer. For them, summer slide means work, not play. That's the term for the learning loss that students experience between school years. Michigan educators say it's critical that they keep their skills sharp, especially through reading. And they say that bond with books should start long before a child ever starts school. Okemos, Michigan, 10 a.m., clear skies, 80 degrees. The pad sits ready. Major Tom is putting his helmet on, metaphorically speaking.
Ground control to Major Tom.
One shot off. Then there were three. Three little rockets with nothing to do. One shot off.
At his feet, a half a dozen tiny ground control crew members are helping Tom Schultz with the launch.
I don't want to fly to the sun, I'll melt!
They're sitting on the floor and soaring into space, just the way reading should be. Schultz is the youth librarian with the Capital Area District Libraries in Okemos. Today he's reading Earth, Space, Moon Base by Ben Joel Price. These story time sessions get the kids reading, talking, playing, singing, and writing. All these activities add up to the concept called literacy. Summer is a busy time for the Okemos Branch Library. It's when head librarian Betsy Hull makes a strong pitch to her patrons with young children.
Sit down with them and enjoy the book that you're reading right there, right then. It can be a picture book. It can be anything that they want to read through together. That's where it all starts.
Building good reading skills can be a challenge when school is out. That's especially true for economically disadvantaged kids who have few learning resources. The Boys and Girls Club of Lansing offers summer recreation for more than 250 children every day, but there's also time set aside for tutoring. Lois Demps is a retiree and full-time volunteer in the RSVP Foster Grandparent Program.
What I'm finding is that a lot of the kids are very, very willing to learn. And they especially like it when there's a little competition there. So it's turning out great, and I'm enjoying it. I think they're benefiting.
Today, Demps is having some quality one-on-one time with 7-year-old Isaiah. He's reading about a red hen.
Red hens is a...
The program director here, Christina Medina, has an acute interest in Isaiah's reading ability. He's her son.
He likes it. He doesn't really always enjoy it because he struggles.
The school wanted to hold Isaiah back in kindergarten, Medina explains, but could not because of his age. Isaiah is going into the second grade. Once he gets to third, he'll be required to meet the state reading proficiency standard or else face retention. Lois Bader knows there's a lot of kids in Michigan like Isaiah, and she's not a fan of the new law.
This is going to be devastating. There's no question about it. Some adjustments are going to have to be made.
Bader is the executive director of the Capital Area Literacy Coalition. She's an emeritus professor at Michigan State University who still teaches literacy coursework to education students. More than 100 of them work with her each semester as reading tutors. Bader is a strong advocate of reading to children from an early age, but she feels the state's one-size-fits-all mandate doesn't tailor to individual student development.
Children grow at different rates, and sometimes extremely bright children are not ready to read until fourth grade, but we don't give them a chance.
The pen are
good.
Back at the Boys and Girls Club, Isaiah Medina makes it through his lesson. His mother, Christina, dabs her tears.
After he read the story, he just came into me, Mom, I read the whole story, and he was like, I did it, I sound out all the words. So just to see the joy on his face, knowing that he actually was able to read it on his own, that just makes a mother just feel just happy, and just I'm thrilled, and it just emotional at the same time, just to see that my baby is able to finally break through.
The book is a small victory. Literacy is a journey, not a destination. But Isaiah is fueling up his own rocket. As we said at the start of the show, reading proficiency levels among Michigan's K-12 students are falling at an alarming rate. It's hoped that measures such as the new third-grade reading law will slow the downward progression and catch more students who need help getting up to speed. Education officials are meeting the new law with a mix of hope and caution. Some are questioning if the state can effectively hold back potentially hundreds of students. Lois Bader is the executive director of the Capital Area Literacy Coalition in Lansing. Bader is a semi-retired Michigan State University professor and an expert on childhood reading development. I asked her to define what literacy really means.
Well, literacy is understanding communication, and a lot depends on vocabulary with regard to that. We're hearing from some of our people working with the inner city children that they don't know even everyday vocabulary. So that needs a lot of talking with, reading, writing. Our point of view here at Calc is that we take a writing approach to reading, that we give children an opportunity to write their thoughts even if at the kindergarten level. And so we give them the alphabet. It's either on the wall in front of them or it's on an alphabet strip. And we let them use the alphabet and write their thoughts. This is a thinking person's approach to phonics.
Is writing an easier concept to learn than reading?
I'm not sure. We've seen five-year-olds who haven't been taught how to write or how to form letters or whatever. And if they're accustomed to pencil and paper use, they can copy letters and so forth. And the approach that you use, if it's meaningful, it'll be retained.
A couple of years ago, the Michigan legislature passed the third grade reading law. That means that starting this school year, 2018, third grade students who do not score proficiently in the English language arts section of the MSTEP, the standardized test, will have to repeat the third grade in 2019. That's a new mandate. Do you have any thoughts on that particular law?
I have many thoughts on that law, no question about it. The latest bit of information I read about it is about half of the third graders in Michigan would be retained under that law. And so what do we do about it? This is going to be devastating. There's no question about it. Some adjustments are going to have to be made. The program that we have in Reach and Succeed, where we have mostly MSU students who are trained to tutor, we take children who come to us in the second grade without the alphabet, reading primer level, and in at least two semesters, we get them all on grade level. So what's frustrating to me is that all of these children can learn to read. Some of them that we see in very poor inner city schools are very, very bright. When we have a child that goes up three grade levels in 2 months, we know we're working with a very bright child. And so we're ignoring children, especially poor children, who have ability and can read and should be able to succeed. But when these children have the poverty that they're living in, some of them have parents who've gone to prison, they're in foster homes, they have mothers who are working two jobs and on minimum pay, they're really suffering, but they could learn.
So illiteracy then, in your experience, is more socioeconomic than it is cognitive, although I'm sure that exists too.
Well, yes, but see, exactly when we talk about cognitive level, I don't know if many of the listeners are aware of the Giselle Institute at Yale, But they've looked at child growth and development for many years, and they're still current in their research. And what they have told us is that children's cognitive abilities really don't gel until they're 7 years old. And anybody that's been an elementary teacher, taught first graders and second graders, know that a first grade boy at 6 years old will wiggle around and fall off his chair and not be quite ready for guided instruction. When he's 7 years old, he's like a little man going to work because he's now 7 years old. And so what we've done in Michigan is ignore the cognitive development of the children. So to put a five-year-old who should be doing art and science and getting along with his peers, what we're doing is we're drilling them on phonemics and phonics, which is very, very foolish. I hope there's enough flexibility built in that we can make individual decisions about people who are ready and so forth. We might need, because of the effect of this law, we might need some summer reading programs. And actually here at Calc, when we had enough money, we did have a couple summer reading programs, and the principals told us that the children had gained enough that they were able to not retain them and so forth. So there is the possibility of that.
Can strong literacy and a voracious appetite for reading pull you out of poverty?
I read myself out of southwestern Pennsylvania on the edge of Appalachia. I was a reader, and that did it because I was such a reader, read everything I could get my hands on. I even went down the block and read my cousin's Tom Swift books because I was out of reading material. I read everything, and so as a result, I scored high on tests. When you score high on tests, then you move along, and so there's no question that reading did it for me.
Dr. Lois Bader is the executive director of the Capital Area Literacy Coalition. We've been talking about the third grade reading law and other topics related to literacy in Michigan. Dr. Bader, thank you for having time for me.
Thank you. I enjoyed our talk.
Me too.
Everyone loves a tale of redemption. The 2016 Cubs, the 2018 Loyola men's basketball team. Of course, comeback stories don't just happen in sports or in Chicago. This one takes place on our side of the lake, at an elementary school in a northern Michigan tourist town. You might call this one the Kenwood Comeback. You can describe Cadillac, Michigan in just two words, woods and water. Towering pines nestle the shores of two large lakes, the very picture of a summertime dream. Glam rock band Kiss once played here at the high school's 1975 homecoming. There's a monument to the moment near the school. And just down the road sits Kenwood Elementary. 4 years ago, Kelly Buckmaster heard the words no principal ever wants to hear. The state called Kenwood a priority school after its overall performance ranked in just the second percentile of all schools in the state.
It's alarming. No one wants to be working at the bottom performing school in Michigan.
The students were stressed out. Many had disciplinary issues. Kenwood had a reputation in the community. And that's when Emily Bender arrived. She's the school counselor.
It was like, oh, good luck at Kenwood, and you're going to have your hands full at Kenwood. So right away, I had a soft spot in my heart for, you know, the kids here and the staff here, and I could see that they wanted what was best.
What Kenwood needed was resources. Wexford County is one of the poorest counties in Michigan. The average household income here is just over $40,000 a year, and about 70% of Kenwood students qualify for free and reduced lunch. Bender noticed Kenwood was the only one of Cadillac's four elementary schools without a mentoring program. So she reached out to some local churches who donated clothes, money, and some quality one-on-one time. One even built the kids some new playground equipment. Meanwhile, the teachers recommitted to strong academic results. They developed small group instruction tailored to individual students. They created checkpoints along the way. And, says Principal Kelly Buckmaster, they built classrooms focused on their students' achievements rather than their own agendas.
A teacher-centered classroom is one where the teacher is making their plans and they're covering curriculum, and they feel as though that's what the job is. And when you have a student-centered classroom, you assess, you know, did they get what I wanted them to learn? Did they learn it? And if they didn't, what do I do about it then?
who can tell me what a verb is? Addie?
Something you do.
Something you do, an action word. Nice job, guys.
Kenwood made strong strides in reading and math. Within 2 years, the school had climbed from the number 2 percentile to 59th. Today, Kenwood students far outpace the state average for students in poverty. The problems haven't gone away completely, though. Counselor Emily Bender says one of the biggest issues is attendance.
There's a lot of misconceptions about kids are like cutting and pasting all day, and who cares if they miss school one day a week? We know the reality of that is they're doing really important academic things. So a kid that's missing one day of school a week, or even a couple days a month, that's really impactful in the long run when you look at all the instruction they're missing.
Troy Finstrom is part of the Kenwood recipe. He started off 4 years ago as a classroom teacher. His job title now, success worker.
What's a success worker?
It's an everything job.
Finstrom works with behaviorally challenged kids. He's a sort of Sherpa on their journey through life's lessons, like perseverance and accepting failure.
A lot of times kids come in and they're always told, oh, you're the best, you're the greatest, oh, you're awesome, you're this. And they don't ever hear like, yeah, you know, we didn't do our best on this one. We need to try a little harder, or yep, we weren't picked first. That's life. How do you accept it? How do you realize it's not an attack on me? It's not somebody putting me down, and just developing resilience.
Finstrom can see the changes in behavior. There was a time, he says, when discipline problems prevented Kenwood from holding all school assemblies. Now they happen every Friday.
To me, that's the biggest telltale overall sign of our turnaround, is that we can have our kids together celebrating, acknowledging each other, and really focusing more on what we can do instead of what we can't.
Kenwood Elementary is still a work in progress, but some of the techniques tried here are starting to catch on in a few other schools in the district. With its numbers back in the black, the question is, can Cadillac take its brand on the road to rev up the engines of schools all across the state of Michigan? Remember your elementary school teacher? You know which one. It was the person who taught you that respect is just as important as reading, that manners count just as much as math. Well, that teacher still exists in schools all over America, and earlier this year, one of them was named the 2018 Michigan Teacher of the Year. It's 10:15 on a Friday morning in Vicksburg, south of Kalamazoo. But in a small room at Sunset Lake Elementary, it's also 3:30, 6:25, and even straight up noon. Or maybe it's midnight. Holding cardboard clocks, a couple dozen second graders scatter off in pairs. Laura Chang smiles to herself. She knows there's a lot more going on here than just telling time.
They're working on how to agree and disagree agreeably. They're working on how to get along with peers that they might not have chosen should they choose their own partner. As many times as possible during the day, I try to make the work so much more than just academic.
There's a song to help infuse the lesson. Chang calls her kids into focus, and they readily respond.
All set.
You bet.
All eyes are on her.
Clocks have two hands. Clocks have two hands. Short and long. Short and long.
Once you build those strong relationships with students, they'll do anything for their teacher to succeed.
I need a volunteer, please. Drum roll. Michael.
Laura Chang's journey to becoming Michigan's next Teacher of the Year began right here. She did her teaching internship at Sunset Lake Elementary 18 years ago. Since then, she's been an instructional consultant, developed literacy programs, and taught graduate-level college courses. Chang has three core principles she carries into the classroom. She calls them her rocks. First, be kind. Second, be a lifelong learner. And third, stand up for each other. That one gets a lot of practice.
We role play it and we act it out. What would we do? What could friends do? How could we take care of hearts? That's so important these days, especially, you know, when you think about school safety and the social emotional capacity of kids. We've got to take care of kids' hearts so that they can take care of one another and take care of themselves.
Say that, Michael. It's okay. I'll help you.
It's okay. I'll help you.
Okay. Can you help me then?
Chang's message is filtering into her students' homes, and parents like Adrian McClelland are noticing.
Instead of saying, no, you can't do that, or that was wrong, finding ways to turn that around and saying, it's cool, and let's find a new way, or just different things like that. And yeah, even my other kids, like we take it home and are able to utilize it at home as well.
Christy Young's two sons have both been in Chang's class, and as an educator herself, she can appreciate her patience.
I call her the patron saint of wiggly little boys.
Oh my word! That is so sweet. I have a wiggly little boy of my own. I think that helps.
Her son is in her class, by the way. Chang treats him as she does all her students, as a person with unique capabilities.
There's genius in every child, whether it's academic, social, emotional, leadership qualities in every child. So we capitalize on those opportunities. When students have an idea, we run with it. And it's a joy to work in a school system that values that.
Sunset Lake Elementary embraces a philosophy embodied in a program called The Leader in Me. Principal Amy McCaw believes Chang will be able to spread that message as Teacher of the Year.
I love the idea of her being our voice. She's going to be a great model at the state level to share what we want all of our kids in Michigan to have.
Chang's tenure will differ from her predecessors. She'll chair the Michigan Teacher Leadership Advisory Council, a new 10-member group created to help the state reach its educational goals.
You know, when I look at the 9 other regional teachers of the year, they're amazing educators. I've read their bios. It's humbling that I was chosen for this because I'm just an ordinary second grade teacher in a little district here in the corner of Michigan. I hope that I can be the voice for those regular teachers who are working so hard and are passionate for their students.
Now, friends who are going up to regular recess, you too have a great time. Tight to the right, walking feet, please.
The Sunset Lake second graders march out the door for the last time. More will be expected of them when they return in the fall. Third grade is a transitional year, when children shift from learning to read to reading to learn. Under a new law, those who fail to reach reading proficiency on standardized tests will have to repeat third grade in 2019. But Laura Chang isn't worried. She's confident in her ability and that of her peers to intervene to help their students clear the bar. The Michigan Teacher of the Year and her kids will be ready for the task. They've prepared for it together. When we return, the results of the 2018 Michigan Student Test of Educational Progress could be announced by next week. The program has only been in place for 3 years, and some are wondering if the M-Step is in step with the way students learn. And later, the first charter school ever built in East Lansing opens its doors on Monday. Its superintendent wants to shake off any stereotypes.
You're not going to find us standing on a podium promoting charter schools. We want to be based on our own merit.
We'll take you to Cole Academy East. That's coming up on Current State from WKAR, your NPR station for the Capital Region. Welcome back. This is Current State from WKAR, your NPR station for the Capital Region. I'm Kevin Lavery. Education touches every facet of our society, especially the economy. Businesses have a stake in a skilled, adaptable workforce. This summer, a number of business and labor groups joined a coalition of some 30 members to support good educational practices. Launch Michigan lifted off the ground in June, and it represents more than 700,000 people. Doug Rothwell is part of that coalition. He's the president and CEO of Business Leaders for Michigan.
The goal here is not to develop a comprehensive plan, but rather to focus on a set of issues that collectively we feel will have the greatest impact on student outcomes. And the first couple we're going to focus on are teacher development, because we know teachers are so important to student learning, raising public awareness of the importance of education and also where we stand and the work that needs to be done. And then the other is developing an accountability system, not just for students and teachers, but for everybody that touches the system, principals, districts, the legislature, the governor, everybody that has a stake in this. Our goal is to try to get as much of that done by November as we can, but that's just the beginning. That's phase one. We'll work on other issues beyond that. We've never done this before, but, you know, we're optimistic.
Launch Michigan continues to craft its agenda. The group is aiming to present a final plan to candidates and elected officials in time for the November general election. The start of each school year in Michigan is about the time when the state announces the results of its latest standardized test. Starting in April, thousands of students take the Michigan Student Test of Educational Progress, or MSTEP. It's how educators measure a student's proficiency in math, science, social studies, and language arts. The MSTEP is a relatively new test. Since its introduction in 2015, reading proficiency scores have dropped in each of the past 3 years. That has some people questioning whether the MSTEP is really the right fit for Michigan students. First, let's lay this fact on the table.
Nobody likes a test.
The word itself provokes a visceral reaction from most of us who don't enjoy having our intellectual feet held to the fire. But Andrew Middlestead knows the value of a test. He directs the Office of Educational Assessment and Accountability at the Michigan Department of Education. Middlestead leads the team that developed the MSTEP. It was first introduced in 2015 to replace the Michigan Educational Assessment Program, a.k.a. the MEAP. Middlestead says the MSTEP is a tool for the 21st century. It's online and engaging.
It can really allow the students an opportunity to demonstrate some of their skills they've been learning in their classrooms rather than just allowing them to, you know, circle bubbles on a Scantron sheet.
Here's a sample of what kindergartners might hear on the MSTEP.
First, read the story. Next, answer the questions. A box of crayons has many colors.
The MSTEP was designed to move students beyond fact recall and into critical thinking.
Choose the words that tell what crayons have now that they did not used to have.
But the transition has been rocky. In 2015, one half of all Michigan third graders failed to score proficiently in English language arts. By 2017, that figure had dropped another 6%.
Every year that the MSTEP has been around, the scores have gotten worse. What does the state make of that?
Yes, our scores have not been where we certainly would like them. When you look at measures like the MSTEP, it takes a number of years for things to settle in and impacts to be seen. Certainly, we want our scores to be higher. We're optimistic because we know there's a lot of things going on that in a year, 2 years, 3 years, we're really hoping that things will get a lot better.
Middlestead says the state is increasing its focus on early literacy instruction and offering more professional development for teachers. But students don't have time to wait for the statistics to level off. Starting in 2019, third graders who miss the proficiency mark in language arts will be held back. That concerns teachers like Jeanette Barnes, a K through 8th grade music teacher at Paragon Academy in Jackson.
I think it's motivated me to get them exposed to text more often because sometimes I do things by ear. Nobody wants a kid to not be a reader by third grade. You know, it's definitely motivated all of our specials and grade level teachers to get moving.
The notion of mandatory retention doesn't sit well with some educators who say decades of research disprove its worth.
It's really about holding them back to receive the same curriculum, the same instruction, typically within the same exact environment, expecting different results.
Robin Pizzo is director of education at WKAR. A former middle school teacher and literacy coach, she believes retention is ineffective beyond kindergarten and actually increases a student's chances of dropping out before graduation. And as for professional development, Pizzo says there's only so much a teacher can receive and put into practice in a single school year.
So for those students that may be extremely low, 1 or 2 years behind, it can be daunting to say that those supports will be enough for students to move forward.
Michigan teachers spend much of their school year preparing their students for the MSTEP. However, its long-term future is uncertain. The state has asked the U.S. Department of Education for a waiver that would allow 5% of Michigan school districts to opt out of the MSTEP. Those districts would be given the freedom to experiment with creating their own assessment. It's a recognition that technology and social media are changing the way students learn. We'll explore that issue at a later time. East Lansing is about to mark an educational milestone. On Monday, the first charter school ever built in the city will open its doors. Cole Academy East is an expansion site for a charter school that's been operating in nearby Lansing for decades. Charter schools often carry negative stereotypes, but the new school's superintendent says he wants the community to put the rhetoric aside and judge his program on its own merits.
In 600 feet, turn left onto Coleman Road.
There's a big white building with dark square windows and blue horizontal trim on Coleman Road in East Lansing. At least that's where Google says it is.
You've arrived.
Geographically, that's correct. Cole Academy East lies on the northern fringe of East Lansing. It's in Clinton County, sandwiched between DeWitt and Bath Townships. Its superintendent, Brian Shaughnessy, sees the location a little differently.
We're not in East Lansing, we're not in Lansing, we're not in Bath, we're not in DeWitt Township, but we're in all those things.
What Shaughnessy means is that the new charter school he's opening in August will be independent of every nearby school district, yet accessible to every nearby family. The original Cole Academy opened in Lansing in 1995. Students of color make up about 60% of its enrollment. Cole students don't take the M-STEP, the state standardized test. Instead, they take the MAP. It's a test administered by the Northwest Evaluation Association, a private nonprofit educational consulting company. Shaughnessy says the results show early reading and math scores are on par with local public elementary schools. Now, Cole Academy is bringing its business model to East Lansing. But will this traditionally blue community embrace what's often painted as a traditionally red concept?
Our study, other studies bear out this fact that people who are more liberal tend to be less supportive of charter schools.
Sarah Rakow is a political scientist at Michigan State University. She co-wrote a 2014 study that gauged public perceptions of charter schools. Rakow says the most polarizing responses centered around labor unions. Most charter teachers in Michigan are not unionized, a point conservatives herald and liberals condemn. But Rakow says the findings were different when the question turned to who actually runs charter schools.
The majority of charter schools in the state have for-profit entities involved in operating them, and we found not very much impact with that information.
Brian Shaughnessy is quick to note that Cole Academy East is a nonprofit. He wants to distance his school from the mainstream.
You're not going to find us standing on a podium promoting charter schools. We want to be based on our own merit. We're nonprofit, we're independent, we have our own board of directors, and we're doing this for the kids.
Cole Academy East is planning a 6-year growth cycle. In 2018, the school will serve students in kindergarten through second grade. Third grade will follow in 2019. The plan is to keep adding grade levels and construct new wings all the way through eighth grade. All that depends on Cole's recruitment strategy. Just down Coleman Road sits the Hawk Nest neighborhood. It straddles the Lansing and East Lansing school district boundary. Megan Henriksen lives on the Lansing side, but she sends her son to a school of choice in Hazlitt. She heard Cole's sales pitch a year ago, but Henriksen didn't see much stability in its philosophy of building one grade at a time.
I didn't want to take that gamble. And then also, once you hit middle school, I don't believe they have a middle school option or high school option, that he'd have a school that he could continue from kindergarten to 12th grade.
Brian Shaughnessy admits he's not expecting an onslaught of East Lansing students in his first year, but he's confident the numbers will come in time.
This generation now with children, they're really concerned about sending their kids to a safe place that's nearby, that represents what all schools should have, right? Like a microcosm of their community. And that's what this is going to be.
Cole Academy East expects about 120 students when it opens on August 27th. But an upcoming public works project could give those numbers a big boost. The state is planning to extend Coleman Road from just west of the school to the other side of U.S. 127. It's hoped the project will spur more development in mid-Michigan, and with it, more access to a growing community in which Cole Academy East wants to put down roots. A final word now on the third grade reading law. For months, teachers and administrators across the state have been doubling down in their efforts to ensure their students are becoming proficient readers. This is a crucial time in Michigan. Many educators are concerned about the mandate that requires non-proficient third graders to be held back in 2019. Lansing Deputy Superintendent Mark Coscarella is one such voice. Nevertheless, he says Lansing schools are ready for the new year.
The research is pretty clear that retention is not a good solution. It's not a good intervention. Given that, we have the law, so we'll certainly comply with it. We're going to make sure that our kids have the individual reading improvement plans in place. We have screener assessments that'll catch kids earlier so that they can get interventions. We've been working really hard with our schools to make sure our intervention programs are of a push-in model rather than pulling kids out. We know that pulling kids out of the classroom is not as effective as if teachers are going into the classroom and working with kids in a different way.
That That's it for this special Back to School edition of Current State from WKAR, your NPR station for the Capital Region. Thank you for listening. I'm education reporter Kevin Lavery. For the entire WKAR News team, have a great weekend and a successful school year.